belting of Bordeaux, pairing the best wines and picking the next show. Hear Broadway guests and us acting like loons. This you can find here on Tenants and Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the vine dies, whether June's or moon's, I simply turn to my favorite things, and they are a Tenants and Tunes.
Welcome to Tenants and Tunes. I'm Jessica, and it's just me. Jimmy is actually not here because I am in a special location, listeners. I am in sunny San Diego. I escaped the wintry New York City in exchange for sunlight and the beach and going to one of my favorite places in the world, San Diego State University. So while I was there, I just had to bring in our special guest to do a Matterizing the Mentors. So for those of you just tuning in, let me remind you what that means. So this is a special series that we're doing within Tannins and Tunes where we focus on a person. And because matterization in wine means that you're purposefully exposing the wine to oxygen. This is what happens with like port and Madeira, and it gives it that kind of nutty quality, and it really helps mature the wine in a way that only oxygen can do, which normally we don't like because it gives it that like fermented flavor that a lot of people don't like. But for these wines, that's what it's supposed to be. So in this series, I talk to somebody that has been a mentor in my life or somebody that is really, really close to me, and we talk through their career, and I pair a wine with that person. So get ready. Today's special guest is the assistant professor at San Diego State University, Stephen Brodebeck.
Hi, Jessica. I'm so happy to be doing this.
Yay!
And welcome back to San Diego.
Thank you. It's been lovely.
And you picked good weather, too, because it's been really chilly for about the past week. Chilly is about 50, 55 degrees.
Right.
And it's been in the mid-70s today, and it's going to be beautiful all weekend.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's been a nice trip to just literally soak up some vitamin D that I've been desperately needing.
Yeah, we have plenty of it, so it's good to share.
Exactly. Well, let me tell our guests a little bit about who you are. So you're a director, choreographer that does primarily musical theater.
That's right.
You got your BFA from Western Michigan.
That's right.
And then your MFA from Penn State in directing.
That's correct.
And
directing
then,
for musical theater. Yeah.
Perfect. And then roundabout way, made your way to San Diego, which you started in 2015.
That's right. In your last
yes.
year as a student.
Yes. So I got to work with Stephen doing shows like Drowsy Chaperone.
Which you were amazing in.
Aw, thank you. Our listeners have heard me talk about that show way too much.
Yeah, and what's really great is that our designers from that production, where they were in their first year, and now they're in their third year, and so they're putting all of those photos in their portfolios, and they're presenting them at conferences, so it's just fun to revisit the show and all the photographs and everything.
Oh my gosh, I
all
love
the,
that.
All the amazing changes that were made during that one number show off.
Right. I have to tell you a story. I babysit for a seven-year-old. And she wants to watch my YouTube videos
right.
like every day when we're in the taxi crossing town. Her favorite is Show Off.
I love it.
She knows the entire thing, including my inflections.
No, wait, you have a video of that?
Yes, I do.
I need to have that.
Yes.
You have to send
yes,
that to
I
me.
Will.
I didn't know that.
I had a friend take it from the back of the house
oh, yeah.
for my reel. And this little girl, at the beginning, she messed up the words because she can't understand what I'm saying. And she goes, Victor, if you think this is about manatee, you couldn't be more wrong. And so I'm just imagining this manatee.
That would be funny.
Right?
Just a big old manatee.
Right? And that's how she starts it. But she's done the entire number, quick changes and everything in her apartment.
What does she use for costumes?
Jackets.
Okay.
Jackets.
Oh, that's good. What about the fringe skirt?
Oh, she has her school jumper.
Okay. Oh, good, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I have to see. You have to videotape it.
Oh,
when
I will.
You go back so I can see that.
I will. It's pretty hilarious. Also, to watch somebody do exactly, like, even when I messed up, she does the
exactly
mess
what you messed
oh,
up.
Yes.
Oh, of course. She does it verbatim. I love
oh,
it.
Oh, yes. So I want to talk a little bit. Well, first, let's talk about this wine.
Okay.
Because we're already sipping on it, and
it's
we need
really
to
good.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
So this is the 2016 El Castilla from Spain. So El Castilla is actually, Castilla is a location in Spain, but this wine, I don't believe, is from there. They just call it that. Because with wines, you can do that.
You can do whatever you want.
And you can make people think that this is a Castilian wine, but it's not actually. It's just a Spanish wine.
Okay.
But Syrah is typically, we have some juicy notes, red fruits. This one in particular has a ton of oak on it, which I really, really like. It's really toasty.
I'm a big fan of like red Zinfandels.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm loving this.
Yes, because it has that peppery quality.
Correct.
Yeah, that white pepper.
And it's bold. It's big-bodied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely full-bodied. We're looking at it, and it has a really, really nice opaque look about it. Really, really deep purple color.
Yeah.
And then when we smell it, yeah, I'm getting a lot of plum and blackberry.
It's very fruity.
Yeah. And almost a vanilla.
I just smelled the microphone. Not the one. So if you hear that sniff just now, that's what that was. It's been a long day.
Yeah, and it's not as fruity when you taste it.
But it's good.
But it's really, really nice. Like you were saying, really, really full-bodied. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get some other words up here. I bought this from Trader Joe's.
Really?
So our friends out there will know that I love a good Trader Joe's wine. And this one is actually, I think it's like $6.99.
Really?
But it's one of the top wines that's coming from Spain right now.
Oh, wow. And I really like it.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. Let's see. Some
I usually stay within the Zinfandel bubble, so it's nice to like sort of
try something
right,
a little bit
know
different.
That I can step
yeah,
of that.
Definitely. But yeah, this definitely has the spice of a Zinfandel,
mm-hmm.
But without the black fruit. It's more red fruit driven.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm trying to see if we have any other notes here that I'm forgetting. Yeah. Chocolate is in there, which is why we're pairing it with some milk chocolate peanut butter cups.
I know, that's going to be great.
So this is a great wine. Go out to Trader Joe's, pick it up, Syrah 2016 El Castilla. And just like Steven, it is peppery and bold.
I've never been called peppery and bold. I like that.
And makes all the good choices.
I do like that. Makes all the good choices.
Yes. So tell us a little bit. So you just get out of Western Michigan.
Right.
You have a BFA. What's that first audition like?
Well, the first audition actually happened when I was in school.
Okay.
And I auditioned for a cruise ship. And I got it. So directly out of my BFA, 3 weeks later, I was in Los Angeles rehearsing for a cruise ship.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was a featured male singer-dancer on Holland America Line on the MS
Great.
Line Dam. I did Barry Manilow's Copacabana. I played Rico Castelli, which I probably should never have played in my entire life, but I did. His name was Rico. He wore a diamond. Yeah. I'm, those of you that don't know me, I'm clearly not Hispanic in any way, or Cuban, or I'm white as white can be, just as Jessica is.
Yeah.
So I had no business playing that role, but I guess in 1996, no, 2000, when did I graduate? That was high school. Okay, 2000. I guess, I don't know. It was a cruise ship.
That's where we were.
Makeup and wigs and
lots of bronzer.
Lots of bronzer. So I did that, and then when I got off the cruise ship, I started doing some regional work, and then moved to New York in 2001.
Okay.
Actually, a couple months right before 9/11.
Right.
And once 9/11 happened in New York, things really slowed down all around. People weren't leaving. There weren't many jobs open. People weren't leaving Broadway shows, I guess I should say.
Right.
And so I decided to go back out on a cruise ship again. I went on a different cruise line, Crystal Cruises, and I toured.
Make that money.
Exactly. And I toured all around the world. I got to see, talk about like fine wines and traveling all over Europe, all over South America. I mean, I've been to every continent except Africa. So,
wow.
Yeah. We've even sailed like past Antarctica, which was very cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so that was great. And then I moved back to New York, and then I did the European tour of West Side Story, so I wasn't done traveling yet. Then I came back, and I did the Radio City Christmas show for a couple of years. I did a national tour of Pippin that started at the Goodspeed Opera House.
Right.
And then started finding my way as a choreographer and a director, mm-hmm. and realized that that's what I really love to do. And decided I needed to get my MFA in directing.
Right.
Just because I knew I wanted to teach at some point, not quite at the time that I got my MFA, but I just knew that I wanted to learn more craft.
Right.
I felt like I had good instincts as a director, but I wanted to learn from a master teacher.
Of course.
The MFA program at Penn State is headed by Susan H. Shulman, who directed The Secret Garden, Little Women on Broadway. And they take two people every other year. And I thought, well, I might as well apply. I probably won't get in my first try, so I'll try again 2 years later.
Right.
Well, I got in on my first try.
Because you're Steven and you're brilliant.
Well, so it was great. And it's, I always say it's sort of the decision that changed my life. And right. It really has changed my life completely. And from there, I worked on my two Broadway shows, which were Ghost the Musical. I was an assistant director, started off as an intern and then was a second assistant. And then I was the replacement movement associate for Peter and the Starcatcher,
right.
Where I learned the whole show. I upkept, I was upkeeping all the choreography. I put new people into the show. Mm-hmm. And I worked on the transfer when it went back off Broadway. Because, you know, Broadway shows start off Broadway, then they go to Broadway, and then they go back off Broadway.
Right. Well, that's where we are now.
For a little bit. So that was great. And then, you know, I've been directing and choreographing all over the country.
Right.
And then the San Diego State job popped up, and I saw it, and I thought, wow, this job description sounds just like me.
Don't so, you love when that happens?
I know. And I was ready to leave New York and just try something different. And what better place than San Diego, as you know?
Right.
And so I did. And here I am. And again, this is probably the next best decision of my life. I love it out here. The program is outstanding. We have amazing students like yourself. And you know, it's such a vibrant theatrical community in San Diego. I kind of call it Broadway West because it really is.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, how many Broadway shows started in San Diego and are on Broadway this season? There are
right.
two playing across the street from each other.
Exactly.
You know, at the Marquee and at the Lunt. Mm-hmm. That's Donna Summer and Escape to Margaritaville, yep. which both premiered at the Playhouse this past
year. And then Come From Away is the next street over.
Exactly. So, I mean, San Diego truly is the breeding ground for new musicals yeah. on the West Coast. And so we are a part of that at San Diego State, and I'm happy to be out here. And I get back to New York all the time. It's literally the best of both worlds.
I love that. Well, and that inspires me to keep trying because it's going to happen. It will happen.
Yes, it
will. It's going to be great. So what was that moment when you really decided to, I mean, you talked about, I'll apply for this program, and if it happens, it happens. Mm-hmm. But when was that moment, even before that, when your instincts as a director and choreographer kicked in and you said, okay, I think I want to try this more than being a performer?
I kind of knew when I was an undergrad, because I was choreographing main stage productions and right. I was doing my own stuff. And it was always in the back of my head, you're going to be a director.
Right.
You know, I studied Bob Fosse. I studied Michael Bennett. They were like idols of mine, Jerome Robbins. I read every book I could about them. Mm-hmm. And I just, in my head, I was like, that's what I want to do. But I knew I had to perform first because I didn't want to ever look back and go, man, I wish I would have done that. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, when I was in New York, let's see, probably when I got back from West Side Story and I started working with a composer named Chris Wade, mm-hmm. who's a really good friend of mine, we actually did our first cruise ship together.
Oh, fun.
And on the ship, we would do these cabarets that we weren't, you know, paid to do. We just wanted to do something while we were out yeah. there. He was a composer. We were doing his original music. Mm-hmm. And we did these things like 4 o'clock in the afternoon when people are taking a nap. But, you know, there were people
okay.
up. Yeah, no, there were people there. And so we did it. And you know, and he moved to New York as well. And I started directing these cabarets of his new music. He wrote a song cycle called 29 Lives. And so I directed that and then a bunch of other stuff. And so I started doing all this new work, which has started my fascination with new work as well,
right.
which I'm really passionate about. And so it was probably around there. I don't see what year that was. See, probably 2005, 2006,
right.
When I really started in my mind to go, okay, I think I'm about at the point where performing is good, but I really want to make that transition.
Yeah.
And then I went to graduate school in 2009, so that about makes sense.
That, I mean, I love that you are so passionate about new work, and that
yeah.
is something that I love as well. And tell us a little bit about how that is showing itself at State.
Well, as you know, when you were at State, you were a part of two different readings, right? Two or three?
Two
readings
yeah.
of two new musicals. And so we have, in the past, what we've done is partnered with La Jolla Playhouse, or we've done them on our own, where we've done readings of new musicals really sort of at their infancy, but they're mm-hmm. just like right off the page. So we did that. One of them on the eve that,
yes.
that Jessica was a part of was at the National Alliance for Musical Theater Festival as well. So it was really cool to be able to do that. And then this past year, we did our first full production of a new work, a show mm-hmm. called Enchanted April, which is based on the book by Elizabeth von Arnim and the movie as well.
Right.
So I was associated with in New York for a while, and then the workshop in D.C. And so then we were only the second production in the whole world, which is really
so
exciting.
Cool.
Really cool. And its newest version as well. And I have a really good relationship with the writers. And so we did a lot of changes just for San Diego, which was great.
Right.
And now we're launching.
Launching.
See, the wine's kicking in a little bit.
Yes.
Is this what you do, Jessica, on
yes.
this podcast? Is this, okay. It's like drunk history for musical theater.
Exactly.
I get it. So launching. Our new musicals initiative where right. we take a new class in every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to pick a new show that is going to do a reading in one semester, a workshop in the next semester, and then a year later we'll do the world premiere.
That's amazing.
And we did submissions and we had over 100 submissions come in.
Wow.
Yeah. And now we've narrowed it down to 4. And so right now my colleague Rob Meff and a student panel as well, we're going through and we're reading the full scripts and listening to all the demos of the 4. And we're getting ready to pick what show that is we're going to take 2 years to develop. And so it's really exciting.
That's incredible. And what a good opportunity, not only for students, but for the composers and the writers to be able to have that time, too.
Well, time, resources, and less pressure. I
yes.
mean, you know, one of the draws is, you know, you come to San Diego, there's the possibility we could get anybody out of the big theaters to come mm-hmm. in and see it. But there's also the lovely idea that there's not the pressure, that mm-hmm. you're not in New York, that you're in sunny San Diego. If you need inspiration, you can go to the beach, sit on the beach, look at the ocean, and come up with a new...
Have a cocktail.
Right. Come up with a new I Want song, right?
Right.
That's really cool. And I really think because musicals are so expensive nowadays and they're so expensive to produce, even to produce a reading in New York City, which I have a couple of shows that I'm trying to get off the ground.
Right.
And just raising money for a reading is difficult.
Yes.
And so we have the resources in terms of personnel in space mm-hmm. and the infrastructure of a regional theater, basically, in an right. academic setting. And then we have some wonderful endowments, some wonderful donors who have been able to donate money that will fund the writer's residency. And so it's
and
a unique opportunity.
And built-in actors.
And built-in actors, right, exactly. So I think it makes sense. It's sort of the, mm-hmm. Not even the future, it's the present
right.
of musical theater development.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. So tell us a little bit more about your experience getting your MFA in musical theater directing and some lessons that you came out from
oh,
that program with.
Oh, that's great.
With.
Let's see. Specificity.
Yeah.
Number one. Let's see. Lessons. You know, one of the big things that I didn't, that in terms of learning in the craft,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think as a choreographer, I've always had a really good, you know, people think, oh, directing is like moving people around. Yeah, okay, fine. It's blocking from
right.
here to there. But what I really learned in graduate school was analysis, like how to really analyze a script, how to analyze a lyric, how to analyze a score. But then what I also learned a lot in graduate school for me, and I think it's because we worked in tandem with the MFA actors in my mm-hmm. program, is acting coaching and how to coach an actor and how to be sensitive towards each actor's sort of idiosyncrasies or each actor's process, I guess I should
right.
say. It's probably a better way to say it. And, you know, you just can't, you know, direct everyone the same way.
Yeah.
Even in a cast of, let's say, 40 people, you've got to figure out how to direct all of 40 of those people.
Right.
You know, and that includes not dismissing an ensemble of 20 and making sure the ensemble is included and right. knowing that they're very important to the show. How many shows have 40 people in it?
Right.
By the way, nowadays, I don't know, it's such a weird number. Again, I blame the wine. But acting coaching was a big thing for me. It was something that we would sit in rehearsal and Susan would never, very rarely would give me notes about my blocking or staging. Every once in a while, she'd say, maybe the chair should go there or something like that. But a lot of her notes were about actor coaching.
Right.
And so it was it was at that moment I realized that's the missing piece. I'm really good at staging. I'm really good at choreography. It's the acting coaching and the analysis that has sort of been missing, that I've sort of glossed over and been like, oh, actors, they'll figure it out.
Right.
No. I mean, like, you know, every actor comes with their amazing skill set and they have great instincts. But I think most actors, if not all actors, rely on the director to go, hey, is this working?
Right.
Hey, what am I doing? Like, do I have a weird twitch when I do that? You know, and
yes.
It's simple things as, you know, pacing in terms of mm-hmm. actor tells, commenting on things. We went through that right. a couple
yes.
times in class with
oh,
you, Jessica.
Oh, yes.
You know, and
I comment so much.
Right. And it's things that I didn't even think about
right.
until she pointed it out. And it was in that real time when we would sit in my rehearsals and my actors would be commenting or doing things on stage. She goes, see, you have to catch that. Or, you know, making sure actors are projecting, even with
right.
microphones. You know, so... all those sort of technical things about the craft, that was really huge for me.
Oh, that's such an honor to be able to work with Susan as well and to have that voice in your head and literally in your ear.
It's never gone, like, which is great, I have to say.
Right.
I'm indebted to her for that because I'll sit in my own rehearsal and Susan will be on my right shoulder going, honey, you can't hear them. Or, honey, I'm sorry, but you know they can't do that in between the lines. You're diffusing the truth in that in all this. So it's just really great.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you, I know that you receive offers left and right to direct things
right.
or to, be a part of different projects. What makes you say yes to a project or a theater or something that you want to work on?
Well, I have to love the show. And if I don't love the show, I have to really like it and know that I'm going to fall in love with it.
Right.
And so that's number one. I'm never going to take on a show. I mean, I've turned down a couple of things where I've said, yeah, I'm not really the right person to direct that.
Right.
You know, I don't love that. And as far as the theater goes, I have to get a good vibe from the artistic director or the managing director, whoever I'm talking to in the hiring process. And I do my research on the theaters as
of
well.
Course.
I talk to actors who've worked there. Because for me, it's important to know what the climate of a theater is.
Mm-hmm.
If I, you know, cause I have so many of my good friends are still actors and I'll say to them, hey, have you worked here? They're like, yeah. I'm like, well, what's the atmosphere like? What's the culture? And they're like, oh, it's great. Or, oh man, it's, you know, you get there and all this stuff happens.
Right.
And you don't want to work there. So that's really important to me. But, yeah. And now that I'm an artistic director as well,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm starting my first season this summer. It's important for me to remind myself of creating that culture and the way that I give offers and just every little detail mm-hmm. is so important because not only do actors and creative teams and designers look at that, it's a matter of your reputation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I love that. Well, and I also love the idea of making sure that you are as good of a fit with a piece that is
mutual.
It has to be mutual.
Right.
It has to be.
Yeah, it's not fair, you know. And I've had a couple of writers approach me with work, and I've read it, and I said, you know, I'm not sure I'm the right person to direct this.
Right.
And then they're like, no, you'll. And I'm like, you know, it's just not my thing.
Right.
And I think the writers appreciate that.
Exactly.
It's not me, you know, judging the work in any way. It just might not speak to me. And
right.
you know, especially with new work. I tend to be a little pickier just because, you know, most of the established work, there's just a few shows out there that I probably won't direct, you know, and even those I can sort of, you know, grow to love them.
Right.
Jesus Christ Superstar is one of those. We did that at State last year and it's never been a show that I've loved, but we did it in a concert version and we do it
yeah.
with the, you know, we do these mega concerts with the School of Music and we had these huge choirs and orchestra and I ended up falling in love with it.
That's great.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. One thing that impresses me so much about you is that you don't stop working.
I know. Almost to a fault.
So even with all the directing and choreographing, you still find time to help others with things like Broadway Bodies that you
right.
worked on in New York. So what was that experience like?
Well, funny you should mention Broadway Bodies. You can look us up at broadwaybodies.com. And is that we just opened our first physical, like, brick-and-mortar space. This past Monday.
Oh, my
last
gosh.
Monday. So this is our second week in our new space, which is at 50 Lexington on the corner of Lexington and...
I have to go?
Yeah, you have to go. it's Lexington and 26th, I think.
Mm-hmm,
But look at 50 Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. It's so crazy to me because Broadway Bodies is something that 10 years ago, my business partner, Jeff Valensky, came up to me, found me online, I think through Friendster, you know, which doesn't exist
right.
anymore, right? And said, look, you're a choreographer, you're a dancer, I'm a business, I'm an entrepreneur, I do small businesses. I have this idea for a dance class that's based on Broadway show tunes. And I said, oh my God, I used to teach something like that at New York Sports Club. Great. Okay, good. So we met, and then we came up with this idea. We spent the whole summer developing it. And then in the fall of 2008, I created this class called Broadway Cardio. And for about a year, it was just every Tuesday night, I taught Broadway cardio. You know, we grew and grew. We had Chelsea Studios, which is where we started. Yeah. And we were there for 10 years, almost 9.5, because 10 years will be this fall. And it just started to take on. And then what we discovered is Beyonce's Single Ladies happen. And so Ramel Ochoa, who is a good friend of mine, he was my roommate on the West Side Story tour. He's now about to do his open in Carousel on Broadway. Oh,
amazing.
Which is great. And he said, you know what? I can learn that choreography and I can teach it. And so we started teaching Beyonce's Single Ladies, and that caught on. And that sort of, weirdly enough, put us on the map and people started coming. And so now, 10 years later, we teach, you know, what started with one class, 7 o'clock on Tuesdays. We do 3 classes a night, Monday through Thursday, and then the 3 on Saturday. Renting space for almost 10 years, and now we finally opened our own space.
Yay!
Yay, it's so exciting. So yeah, here's the thing behind it. Okay, so it's not like a class geared like Broadway Dance Center or Steps.
Right.
It's not geared towards like the dancer. Now, it doesn't mean if you're a dancer, you can't come and have fun.
Right.
Because we teach pretty, you know, challenging material. It started off as like this cardio workout. We want to give you a good workout, sweat and all that kind of thing.
Right.
And now it's just like, come and have fun and learn choreography to your favorite songs. Like, we're doing Bruno Mars Finesse right now.
Yes.
We're doing every Beyonce song you can think of, because she's never not going to be popular.
It's true.
And we did Skylar Sisters as a video I watched that came in last night.
Fun.
I check all the videos every morning of what the instructors do. I'm still the co-owner and co-founder, all the way across the country. And
with everything else you have
going
on.
With everything else, yeah. So it's just really exciting.
That's
and so
awesome.
That's fun. Yeah.
That is so cool. So for our New York listeners, after you go have a glass of wine, go to Broadway Bodies, learn some fun choreo,
it's
I'll
so
be
much
there.
Fun. Yes, absolutely. Jessica, anytime you want to go.
I love it.
We should actually do like some sort of podcast with wine and Broadway Bodies.
Yes.
We should totally make that happen.
Done.
Great idea.
All this wine helps with all
it
the good
really
ideas.
Does. Speaking of, should we
pour
a little
bit
more?
Oh, yes, we should pour some more. Okay. My next question for you is, who is somebody that you are constantly following their career, and every time you see them, you are extremely impressed, that you just can't get enough of?
That's a great question. Susan Stroman always comes to my mind, because she's someone who I think continually is reinventing herself, is continually working. I mean, when I was in high school, I would watch her work all the time.
Right.
Excuse me.
Crazy for You, 2018.
I know. And that was my favorite show. Yeah. And like 1992, I think, is when it came out. And that was when I was a freshman in high school. And so that's really when, you know, I played soccer and I did all, I did musicals. But not until really my freshman year of high school did I really realize this is what I want to do.
Right.
And so I started figuring out, who's this woman named Susan Stroman?
And who wears a baseball cap all the time.
Yes. Ponytail through the back. And so I'd say Susan Stroman is someone who's always on my radar, definitely. And I always like to also see what Jerry Mitchell does, because he's a Michigan guy. He's from Pawpaw. My aunt and uncle grew up there. Or not grew up there. We're living there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to see what Jerry Mitchell does. And he's continually, reinventing himself as a director and a choreographer as well. And then from a film standpoint, and also stage, but Rob Marshall. I mean, he's so multifaceted in what he's doing on film, but also with musical theater. And it's just great. But
and bringing musical theater to film.
Yes.
I feel like he was somebody who really reinvented that. And
well, that was the start, I really feel, of musicals coming back into the mainstream in film with Chicago.
Yes,
I really
agree.
Think it was Chicago.
I agree. Yep. So you teach.
Yes.
And you're an amazing professor. And I've heard a lot of your advice, but what is a piece of advice that you tell students continuously, and especially students who are young and up and coming in the business?
One of the main things, I think nowadays especially, and this is what I teach a lot, especially in the undergrad class that I teach, because I think a lot of the grads, when they come back, they understand this a little bit, but I also try to talk to them about it too. It's about mindfulness and about how to handle rejection and seriously, because I went through it and I thought it was always about me.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm a director and I'm on the other side of the table, I know it's not about the actor.
Right.
Like 90, I, you know, there's this whole idea that 80%, 20, like 80% of the time it's not about you, 20% it is. I'd even put that up at like 90-10.
Right.
You know, you're going to come in and you're going to be really talented and you're going to have a great audition and you're just not going to be what I'm looking for because right. I have a certain thing in my mind as to what I think that role is going to be, or there are certain things that you need to fit into these costumes, or
right.
or we've already cast the entire show and we're really just looking for one person. And all these are all factors that the actor doesn't know going in. Yeah. And it almost puts the actor at a disservice. You know, I don't know if it would be better if the actor, if there was a posting outside the door along on, like the Equity posting where they post who's in the room, if they said also, these are the only roles available and we're not looking for this type of person. You know, I don't know if that would be a disservice or
I
not.
I think it would be amazing. It would save me so much time.
and also emotional
yes.
baggage, right?
Yes.
So I always, this is what I say, is that, you know, you will do the best you can in your audition because you're going to be prepared and you are going to go in there and take advantage of that 30 seconds to 2 minutes, depending on how much time you have. And you're going to perform because you love to perform. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be your time to perform on that day. And maybe you get to do it 2 or 3 times a day. And enjoy
if
it.
If you're lucky.
Right, if you're lucky. But enjoy it because you might have to then go wait tables at night, or you might have to go do a temp job yeah. or something. So enjoy that time performing. And if you're right for it, and if you're and it's what the director's looking for, then you're going to be right for it, and it's going to work. But don't beat yourself up. Don't walk out of the room, and if you don't get a call back, go, man, that was all about me. You'll know when it's about you.
Oh.
We've all had that.
I had it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
For our listeners, I have to tell you, I went in for Tootsie, which is coming to Broadway.
That's right.
And I was really excited. And I said, oh, they're looking for somebody that's funny. And this show is funny. So I'm going to choose my funniest song, which is not a good audition song.
Oh, no.
But I went for it anyway. Well, there was a song that Andrew Byrne, who's my voice teacher,
right.
he wrote it for me. And it's a take on his audition medley.
Oh, right, right.
But
yeah.
he wrote a new one that's literally tailored to my voice. And it hits Annie. It hits Hello, Dolly. It's everywhere. It goes everywhere. Okay, I'm going to do the last 16 bars because it's funny. And unfortunately, the accompanist never knows what to do with it because I set them up for failure.
Right.
And then they get mad at me. And then the people behind the table, they don't understand what's going on until I get done with the song.
And then they go back and go, oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
Right.
But unfortunately, they just looked at me and go, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that was me. That was all me.
And you know that. And that's the thing. You know when you bomb an audition.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then and you just have to accept that and move on.
Yeah.
But don't beat yourself up for the times that you don't get the job and you know you did a good job.
Right.
You just can't. I talk to my students about meditating. I talk to them about mm-hmm. you know, breathing techniques, whatever it is to find calm. Because right. when you go into an audition room, especially a holding room, the last thing you're going to find is calm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how do you find that mindfulness? How do you find that calm mm-hmm. Energy that you need to go into the room with?
Oh, I love that advice. That's something that I need to take with me back to New York.
Yes.
Okay, so
now that I'm in California, it's so much easier to say things
right?
like that because, you know, California is very zen. You know,
everyone meditates.
Right, exactly.
In New York, we're all running around like, yeah, I'll meditate when I have time.
Right, exactly.
Normally, Jimmy would do this with me, and it's going to sound silly for me to do it myself, but get ready. Now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now.
Game time.
Yeah, it's not as good without Jimmy. okay, so game time. And instead of putting you through musical theater trivia, because you do that all day long.
True.
I'm going to ask you trivia about yourself.
Oh, let's hope I get it right.
more just quick answers.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so one, favorite audition song to sing?
You Mustn't Kick It Around from Pal Joey.
Ooh. It's Monday night. What are you watching on TV?
Oh, gosh, I'm usually not home on Monday night because I'm usually in rehearsal at school. Mondays are weird. I don't know. I'm going to say a West Wing rerun on Netflix.
Ooh, I do like West Wing. If you weren't a director and actor is not an option, what would you be?
Honestly, I'd probably go back to what I thought I was going to be, is I'd probably run for office. I'd probably be a politician.
So funny. Our previous guest said the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. Terry Mann said the same thing. Huh. Okay. Number four, the moment that you feel like you made it.
I love what I do. Like, I feel like I'm there. I don't know. I feel like I've made it. Like, I'm happy in what I do. I love what I do.
Do you have like a specific moment that you were like, aha, I made it?
I mean, maybe it was my first Broadway show.
Yeah.
You know, that I guess that has street cred.
Yeah.
But I find those moments throughout my life, like with every new thing, getting this job at SGSU, now being an artistic director at a summer theater.
Right.
I guess I'm always raising the bar as to what made it means.
I mean, you are.
Yeah.
First album that you ever bought.
Oh, that's a great question. Let's see if I can remember. I think, like, album or CD?
Both.
Okay. Album, I have no idea. I know that I listened to my parents' vinyl of Jesus Christ Superstar all the time. And Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
The Whitney album when she was, like, on that, like, white crop top on the cover.
Hair.
Right, the hair out. But the first CD I ever owned, I remember very vividly, because when I got a CD player, it was very exciting, was the double disc original Broadway cast of Phantom of the Opera.
You're such a nerd.
I am a musical theater nerd. Yeah.
Best advice you received?
It's not personal.
Great. Yeah. Craziest, I want to say like craziest audition story.
Oh gosh, I have a few. Okay. So I'll give you two.
Great.
One is a success story and one is just funny. So the first one is when I was auditioning for Pippin at the Goodspeed Opera House, it was slated to sort of try out on the road and then maybe come in. Mm-hmm. This was in 2006 before the current revival that came out. And so Stephen Schwartz and Roger Hirshon, the entire creative team was there, you know, the writers and then Gabe Barry and Mark Dendy, the choreographer and director. So I'm at the final callback and I do my audition and on my special skills, it says Carol Channing impression. And I had done this in the original call, but I never thought the director, Gabe, would have me do it in front of all of the Goodspeed brass and Stephen Schwartz and Roger Hirshon. And he's like, can you do your Carol Channing impression? And so there I was standing there after I sang, and I was like, well, hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here today. I just love Pippin. And I don't know. I have no idea what else. Oh, you know what? I think I told the story about Carol Channing, like, not going on in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is where I went to school.
Right.
For the first time ever, she missed a show.
Yeah.
So I think I did that or something. But it was the craziest thing. Cut to a few years later, and I'm auditioning for, I think, Atlanta Theater of the Stars, which I don't think is open anymore. I think it is gone. And I'm auditioning for their whole season, and I sang You Mustn't Kick It Around, and I took the optional high note. And I'm auditioning for this season, I can't remember the other shows. The only show I remember is Dreamgirls, which, you know, I think there's
that one. You're obviously right for.
Right. Cadillac Cars, I think the only number, right?
Right.
You know, that I'm right for. And Jennifer Holliday was directing it. And so nobody's paying attention to me on the panel for all of the other shows, which are probably like Oklahoma Brigadoon and, you know, who knows. And Jennifer Holliday's like, she goes, yes, that's what I like to hear. Yes. And I thought, oh, that's great. Nobody else cares. Okay, good. Well, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate that. I walked out of the room going, well, I'm not getting cast this season, but that's all right.
But Jennifer Holliday said yes
to me.
She
did, and I really appreciated that. So those are two crazy audition stories.
I love that. Okay, I lost my questions. Oh, they're there. What's your favorite perk of your job, and what's the biggest downfall of your job?
The biggest perk I have is how much I learn from my students,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially in the graduate program. You guys come in and you have such a wealth of experience from all of your, you know, professional work. And mm-hmm. I learn every day different things.
That's great.
The biggest downfall, I guess, you know, in these 3 years, you know, I'm up for tenure this year. So it's been a busy, busy 3 years. And
yeah.
I think for me, the biggest downfall, and I'm hoping to change this, is just the lack of time I have to for myself,
yes.
You know, because I direct two shows a year. And so there's a lot of times where I'm at school from 10 until 10 or 9 until 10. Yeah, it's all right. I mean, again, I'm loving what I do, so it's okay. But yeah. But that's probably it. But,
yeah.
But it's not a bad downfall because I still love it.
Describe your best wine drinking experience.
Let's see. I would say probably when I was in the Bordeaux region of France
and I went
to a winery in Saint-Emilion. I mean, I don't even have to say anything else.
You just can't beat it.
No, it was pretty awesome.
What is your favorite show right now?
Ooh, right now. That's great. Let's see. From a revival standpoint, mm-hmm. the revival of Hello Dolly is about as perfect can be.
Yeah.
I saw it with Bette Midler. It was absolutely phenomenal. I haven't seen, you know, I haven't been to New York since October. I saw the band's visit, and I liked it. I didn't mm-hmm. love it, but I
mm-hmm.
liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think something new that I really love. That's a good question. I'm just going to have to stick with Hello Dolly for right now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat it.
No, it's pretty, it's pretty
and
good.
And I just saw it with Bernadette, and it's just as
I'm
fantastic.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's just like musical theater heaven. It really is.
I cried, and there's no reason to cry at that show, except that she starts singing Hello Dolly. And
or when the
you
train comes across.
Oh,
I mean,
the
come
train.
On. There's like so many. Like, Put On Your Sunday Clothes is so glorious. And you're like, how do they do all of that? And
right.
I saw a time-lapse video of how everything goes up and down. And I'm just like, I'm just amazed by it.
last question. So if you were to pair a wine with Hello Dolly, what would it be?
That's a great question. You know, I'm not a white drinker, but mm-hmm. for some reason, I feel like Hello Dolly needs a white wine. Mm-hmm. It needs like a crisp.
Like a Sauvignon Blanc.
Or something like a South African white.
Ooh, yes.
I don't know why.
I love that.
But that just
like a Chenin Blanc.
Yeah.
I like that answer. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's
Those
it.
Are our questions.
Oh my god.
So politician.
Yeah, I know. Well, when I was a freshman in high school, this was before I had this really amazing experience in the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, mm-hmm. when I did a production of Grease. It's funny, like Grease is the show that sort of changed my life. Which it's not the show that changed my life. It was the choreographer.
Right.
Who had danced on Broadway with Bob Fosse and had been Joe Layton's assistant on George M. And is that right? Joe Layton, George M.
Yeah.
Did I get that right? Okay. I hate to not be correct, so you've got to fact check me. And you'll edit that out
if I was
wrong. But and she changed my opinion of like male dancers because I had gone to a dance studio like 2 years prior. Mm-hmm. And I went to the studio, which was all women and girls. I mean, I was like in middle school, mm-hmm. and I was taught to dance no differently. And you know, you men dance different than women.
Right.
I mean, that's all there's to it. And so I was given like female gestures and all this sort of thing. And I quit after like a week. I was like, mm-hmm. this is stupid. But then I met this choreographer and Sandy Brewer, who recently just passed away within the past year. Mm-hmm. But she's actually was. Dom, who is one of our current students, he and I are from the same area of Michigan.
Ah.
His dance teacher as well, years later.
Perfect. Full circle.
But she literally changed my life in terms of me realizing that, number one, I needed to get back to dance class in order to be in this profession. And number two, that men could dance like men.
Right.
And so it was great. What were we talking about?
Politician. Oh,
being a politician. See, this is what the wine does.
Yes.
Okay. This is all part of it. See, this is all part of the process, isn't it? Okay. It's still daylight out here, too,
it is.
Here in San Diego.
I love it.
Penn State just won the basketball game, which we've had on the background. So very exciting. politicians. So, yeah, I was so active in politics when I was in high school. I volunteered for a bunch of campaigns, and I actually shadowed my state representative a couple of times, and we went on these canvassing things. And I was determined that that's what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, no, you love musical theater. That's what it is. But, you know, in the times that we live in, I mean, I'm still politically active. And I think, who knows, maybe someday.
Well, Cynthia Nixon just
announced. I know. She just announced yesterday.
That she's running for governor.
It was quite the video. I watched it.
Yes.
It was quite the video.
Great.
And I actually saw something online today that she was on a train this morning going to a meeting about the MTA. And her train stopped and shut down. And she had to get off. I mean, it's exactly why she's running, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And welcome to my life. Oh. It is.
Oh, I remember it. I got pushed out. I fell to the ground. Like my last year in New York, I feel like New York was saying, get out.
Right.
Because I was getting off the train I want to say it was down by City Hall or something, and I was just trying to get off, and people were pushing me to get off and pushing to get on, and I fell on like onto the platform.
Right.
It was awful. I felt like I was being trampled.
Yes, exactly.
It's awful.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Wait, that was it?
That's it.
It's been an hour already? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, once we add in
the music
but still, and
it just went so quickly.
Because we'll have to put in that whole thing about Palo Joey. We're going to have to put in that song. Yeah. I'm trying to think of any other songs that we talked about. I mean, we'll put in Pippin.
Right, yeah.
And something from Drowsy, probably me singing.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's great. We could talk for hours.
Right? Where can people find you on social media?
Okay, so my Twitter handle is at sbroto, S-B-R-O-T-O. I'm of a generation where we made up these names before people made them really easy. I was on all of these sites before they were actually, you know, popular.
You're a trendsetter.
I guess. And then on Instagram, I'm at Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-M-B-N-Y-C. That's such a mouthful. Can you change that? Can you go back and change
it? I have no idea.
Okay, so that's that. And then Facebook, you can find me just through my first and last name.
And then you can also follow the program at SDSUMTMFA.
That's right.
And
On Instagram.
And I don't know if Twitter is happening.
Well, we have an account. I just don't know how much we use it.
Great.
I mean, most people mostly use Instagram.
Yeah, I am definitely not a Twitter person. That is not my forte. I am definitely an Instagrammer. And you can find me at JM Humphrey on Twitter, though not really, Instagram. And then you can follow the show, Tannins and Tunes, at Tannins and Tunes on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And then you can also email us your questions and comments and any wines that you're drinking at tannins and tunes@gmail.com. And then don't forget, listeners, this is a big one, we're still doing our review challenge. So if you rate and review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. We're on Stitcher now.
What is Stitcher?
It's for Android users.
Oh,
see, yeah. Yeah. I don't know anything about that, but...
But that's great, Android users.
Yeah, yay, but you can now listen to us on Stitcher. And if you rate and review us, we will pair a wine with your username.
Well, that's fun.
On our next episode. Also, every review, we will match with $1 towards... I think this month we're still doing the Time's Up campaign.
That's really great.
So if you rate and review, that's $1 towards Time's Up, and we'll keep doing that as long as we can. So, Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a blast.
I know. It's been so much fun. We could keep going for hours.
Oh, always. All always right. More wine.
Always more wine.
Sorry.